So, Peter.
Yes.
It's not uncommon these days to hear people describe the current state of things as upside down.
I think that's fair to say in the last 6 months. A lot of people's lives have been upside down a lot longer than that, but everybody's been sort of upside down the last 6 months.
No doubt about it, but possibly because of that, some news that came out, I believe it was April, you know, smack dab in the middle of where COVID was really blowing up, so to speak. And of course, there was a lot of attention on that. And you could argue potentially why this didn't get as much attention as it did.
So many things got buried.
Yes, and absolutely. And to be honest, even within that, taking that all into account, it maybe did get relatively a lot of coverage. But there was a story in April that there was an experiment going on through NASA up in the Arctic. We'll get into that a little later. But essentially what the results had shown was potentially evidence that a parallel universe existed where time went backwards. And of course, that was the juicy headline. Universe, you know, parallel universe discovered with where time goes backwards. People were like, what?
Hell on earth.
But I don't, yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, some people were like, well, whatever. But other people were like, wait a sec, what the hell are you talking about here?
It was matter's evil twin.
It was matter's evil twin, our friend or enemy. Antimatter.
Yeah, I remember hearing the backwards universe theory.
Yeah, which again, I mean, interestingly, the movie Tenet is out now where that idea of time going backwards is actually, it's not a spoiler, people, relax. It's in the trailer. But this idea that there could be literally an opposite universe, a bizarro world, if you will.
Like in Seinfeld.
Like in Seinfeld, like Superman. And it's not something I realized. Antimatter is not something we know very much about.
Do you know who does know a lot about antimatter?
Our guest today?
Of course.
Liz Landau.
Liz Landau is an award-winning journalist and science communicator. A self-professed lifelong nerd, Liz is interested in astronomy, particle physics, archaeology, allergies, math, music, and of course, the number pi. Pi. Liz holds a bachelor's degree in anthropology from Princeton University and a master's in journalism from Columbia University. Liz spent 6 years at CNN before joining NASA in 2014.
Liz, welcome to What If Discussed.
Oh, it's so great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
So in the beginning, as Peter and I were talking about off the top, according to Big Bang Theory, a lot of energy was created.
A lot.
A lot of matter was created. A lot of antimatter was created. And then somehow the matter won out. We get galaxies and planets and stars and Peter and Richard and Liz. And kind of there's still a pretty big mystery as to what happened to the antimatter. And I'm sure I'm butchering this, but that's why you're here. Care to posit a guess as to what happened? It could be worth a Nobel Prize that maybe you could share with Peter and I.
Right? Yeah. So as you said, and it's kind of like that Bare Naked Ladies song that plays at the beginning of the show, The Big Bang Theory, our whole universe was in a hot, dead state. Then nearly 14 billion years ago, expansion started. Wait, like that's actually accurate in that song. But in any case, in those first moments, you know, there was this creation of equal amounts of matter and antimatter. And it is, as you said, such a mystery about why we are all made of matter today. And in fact, it would have only taken one in a trillion of an imbalance, one part in a trillion more matter than antimatter to give rise to the universe that we see today. And you know, what was responsible for that one part in a trillion is still a mystery. I don't have any particular guesses of my own, but the particle physicists at places like CERN in Europe are really looking at what kind of physical processes could give rise to an imbalance of matter and antimatter, such as when certain particles decay.
Math, science, history, unraveling the mystery.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
It all started with the Big Bang. Liz, you can obviously create a lot of energy by splitting an atom, as we found out, by creating nuclear power and ultimately nuclear weapons. How does that stack up with the energy created when matter and antimatter collide?
Yeah, so you might be surprised to know that while we don't see any antimatter around us, there actually is a tiny, tiny bit. And in fact, I brought an antimatter producer with me. This is a banana. Hello. This banana, and any banana really, is actually producing a single particle of antimatter every 75 minutes or so.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's about how long a banana lasts in my house before it turns black.
And so... if you got together all the bananas of the world, however, you still wouldn't have enough antimatter to produce the kinds of explosions that you might see in a sci-fi show.
So is that because of the potassium in the banana?
That's correct. Potassium 40 is a radioactive isotope, and that's why every 75 minutes or so, a single anti-electron or a positron is actually... coming out. But a single particle, especially a single particle of antimatter, will not stay around for a while because it will immediately meet its evil twin, a regular electron, and they will annihilate. In fact, the single particles annihilating is really not going to produce any noticeable effect. Otherwise, we would see flashing lights all the time, right? In fact, our own bodies produce a negligible but an amount of antimatter. But in any case, you would really need a gram of it. If you had a gram of matter and a gram of antimatter, that could actually produce the explosion of a nuclear bomb. However, we can all take comfort in the fact that it's nearly impossible to collect a gram of antimatter because these particles are so fleeting, they're annihilating with matter all the time, and it's very difficult to trap them.
And in fact, very cost negligible, let's say, or I guess...
Costly.
Yeah. I could have just said costly.
Opposite.
Because, I mean, there's all sorts of numbers floating around as to what it would cost to create antimatter. I have 1 milligram of antimatter would be about $100 billion to produce. Why is creating antimatter so expensive?
Yeah, again, when you have only... single particles of antimatter being created naturally and being annihilated in less than a second, you know, it's very difficult to amass them in any appreciable quantity. It's some of the experiments that they're doing, for example, the Alpha experiment at CERN in Switzerland, they actually have to decelerate these particles and they have to have some kind of magnetic field to trap them. So you have to have like literally a magnetic trap to get all the antimatter together to even really study their properties in any appreciable way. And even, you know, that experiment is part of this huge nuclear research organization, CERN. And, you know, CERN also has the Large Hadron Collider, you know, multi-billion dollar world's largest science experiment, which also, you know, studies antimatter. So, just because of the tiny, tiny amount of antimatter available, it's so expensive to do anything meaningful with it scientifically.
Hmm. One of the reasons people have looked into creating antimatter is to potentially power spaceships. Why would antimatter be effective as an energy source for space exploration?
Yeah, if you could get appreciable amounts of it together, you know, if to have that huge explosion of annihilation of matter and antimatter together, that could be extremely powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, a kilogram of antimatter and a kilogram of matter, if they were somehow able to come together, that could be like 1,000 atomic bombs. That would be a lot of energy, absolutely. But again, because it's so expensive, it is sort of impossible to do anything like that to harvest the power of antimatter right now.
It would probably be pretty dangerous to have in a spaceship, too. I'm imagining all that power. Are there any other practical applications of antimatter that we know of?
Yeah, actually, it's really awesome. In the medical field, we have what's called a PET scan that you might have heard of, which stands for positron emission tomography, and this is actually using antimatter to do brain scans non-invasively. What they do is they give you a substance that has a radioactive isotope in it, just like bananas have radioactive potassium 40, you would get, you know, a harmless substance that has a radioactive element in it. And then as that radioisotope decays, it emits these antimatter particles that then interact with your brain, again, in a very harmless way because there are so few particles, but in a substantial way such that you can actually produce a brain scan.
So sort of like an MRI on steroids.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's the type of eloquent, articulate examples you get here on What If Discussed.
Scientists.
From Richard and Peter. So when I hear, you know, antimatter explained, and it's essentially the mirror opposite of matter, it, you know, it rotates at a negative versus a positive. And if you do a deeper dive, it's essentially, you know, up to matter's down, black to matter's white, that type of thing, which, you know, kind of sounds like Bizarro World Superman or a lot of the other sci-fi
Ebony
tropes.
Ebony and Ivory.
And so that could get someone to wondering, and that someone, of course, is me. It sounds almost like parallel universe theory. And that might have been sort of crazy talk at some point if we were doing What If Discussed 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. These days, with string theory and multiple universe theory being more accepted in mainstream physics, is this now something that could be the sort of the first real ability to... We talked off the top about that, the news that came out earlier in April about the, you know, maybe there was evidence or that, you know, there was a universe that time was going backwards, et cetera. Is antimatter maybe the sort of the window into really understanding that?
Well, I guess the short answer is we don't know. I mean, there's really no evidence that's substantial of a parallel universe or anything, but it is really intriguing that every particle we know has an evil twin, if you were to say something like that. And, you know, if you, Richard Feynman had a quote about, you know, if you were to meet your antimatter twin on Mars, like, don't shake hands, right? but yeah, I mean, right now, you know, antimatter is really most interesting to scientists because it really gives us this it's such a fundamental mystery about why we are the way that we are and really why we exist at all. Because again, in theory, if there were as much matter as there were antimatter, it all just would have annihilated and we just would have had a universe of energy. But again, it was that one part in a trillion that was a little bit more matter that may have explained why we are here today.
Doesn't sound random to me, but that, of course, is a story for another.
What if?
Can you stick around, Liz? Because we have plenty more to talk about. We will get to that on the other side on the extended version of What If Discuss, the audio podcast. Where can people find your work?
Oh, yeah. You can go to my website, lizlandau.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I am co-hosting a podcast called Pod Paper Scissors that you can find on podpaperscissors.com. For NASA, I produce a podcast called Gravity Assist, which is at nasa.gov/gravityassist. And I also write songs about science that you can find on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/LizLandau.
So you weren't just riffing off the top there. That's actually one of your many talents is singing, improv, and also talking about the solar system. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Liz Landau. Stick around for more with Liz on the other side. Where can people find that link, Peter?
Well, if you're watching the YouTube, you can find it right below the window here.
Right
this
there.
Is it.
There.
This right down here. But if you're listening already on the podcast, don't go looking for a link. You can't. You're wearing headphones. You're not looking at a screen. There's no link to look for. Just keep listening. We'll continue with Liz Landau on the other side.
Okay, thanks, Liz. We'll talk to you later in the show.
It was so fun. Thank you so much.
lots to talk about after that sort of first half discussion. The people out there right now making bitcoins and like, you know, in their basement with like 15 computers and whatever.
Oh my God. Imagine how much they could make if they had powered their computers with.
Two words for you. Antimatter. Get on it. It's basically the new gold.
It
obviously
sounds
expensive.
Oh, you mean you're talking about them finding antimatter? I thought you were talking about powering their Bitcoin computers with antimatter, because those Bitcoin computers use quite a lot of electricity.
So here's the business plan. You create the antimatter, then you put that antimatter into powering those computers. You can make more antimatter, and of course you're rich. You're a supervillain, you're a Bond villain. But that's another discussion. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, it is interesting that you have the top scientists on the planet Earth who all seem to have a consensus around the idea that at that Big Bang origin point, an equal amount of matter and antimatter is created. We're all in agreement on, we're all, okay. The antimatter essentially, for the most part, outside of bananas and some other floating around, disappears. Yeah. Anybody have any idea where the no? Anybody have any idea what it means? No. Like you don't, you usually you'll have some rogue people, some scientists out there with some, you know, some strong theories.
Theory about,
but,
yeah.
But basically, matter wins out. You have the creation of things that we see as solid. And antimatter is still a big question mark. And the place, again, not surprisingly, perhaps, in the news so prominently years ago when they were looking for the God particle, CERN.
CERN.
They seems to be the place.
Well, they can create it.
Yes. But as she's talking about, I mean, I don't know what the price tag was of CERN to build CERN, but it's in the billions. It's, you know, stories in the underground. Yeah. And when people were talking about that whole, you know, again, the search for the God particle, the Higgs boson, if people, you know, don't know the term. But, you know, some people were asking questions, laymen like myself.
And myself.
Wait a sec. So let me get this straight here. You're going to be crashing particles of antimatter and matter into each other at close to the speed of light. Now, I just Googled here on Wikipedia.
Dangerous.
It seems to say when that happens, they self-annihilate and it creates some sort of energy level, as Liz talked about, that's on the scale with atomic bombs.
Well,
should I be concerned?
A lot of people thought perhaps we were going to create a black hole.
Yes. But we didn't know definitive. Well, you and I did.
We didn't. The layman, as you speak.
Yes.
But the scientists knew. They knew one particle versus one particle will create an explosion this big. You know, a gram of antimatter versus a gram of antimatter will create an explosion X big.
Manageable. And it seems, again, when you're on the other side of history, things seem impossible, right? Again, you know, we've talked about it before. I think it was like late 1800s, at the end of the 19th century, it was considered scientifically impossible for lighter than air flight, as it was called, flying. I think in 1908, the Wright brothers are flying a plane, like less than whatever, 10 years later, they took something that was completely inconceivable and literally considered impossible. And then they did it. We know how that story ended. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, cut to we're going to the moon. So
I mean, you could argue that story has not ended.
And absolutely. Yeah. And I agree. Well, maybe that's where I'm going unconsciously, is that you figure out this antimatter issue and the energy that's created through that. And you could harness this. Now, we made the wrong. Let's say we made a mistake. You could argue some people would say nuclear energy is a massive part of really cleaning up the world and getting it safer, but also, you know, getting rid of fossil fuels. Other people would say, no, I think splitting the atom was a mistake because of the ramifications of nuclear weapons. Do you trust us, Peter Smeichen, to be able to crack the nut on antimatter for the pluses it could create for the world versus the minuses?
I do. Because,
faith in humanity.
Well,
I like
if you're talking about the mistakes made with nuclear, I think we've realized as a civilization that we've that could have been a mistake, mm-hmm, in some ways that it's been utilized. I think going forward, people aren't, maybe they are, I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking they aren't interested in using it as a weapon, but
yeah. Somebody is. But maybe to your point,
Blofeld is.
Again, a Bond villain. Yeah. There's always a Bond villain out there.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think enough people understand that, you know, to your point, the learning from mistakes. Yes, we do repeat history and make mistakes. But if we're able to solve it's not free energy, which a lot of people have talked about, you know, basically taking energy out of essentially the ether and being able, because there's so much energy and such, we just haven't been able to figure that out.
It's not free energy yet.
It's not free energy yet.
Until we figure that out.
So again, perhaps a Nobel Prize in the future for both Peter and I. Well, I think it would be a shared Nobel Prize. We'll let Liz know if her name is included on that. But I think if we're doing this show in 5 to 10 years, there's been a massive amount of progress on the understanding antimatter and how to harness energy out of it, I hope.
Well, why don't we pick it up with Liz Landau on the other side in the extended audio podcast. Now, there's a link to that if you're watching on the YouTube. On the YouTube, kids.
You're
watching
like on the my YouTube? Grandmother. Yeah?
If you're watching this on our on YouTube channel, there's a link to the extended audio portion right below you. Now, that's, like I say, if you're watching, if you're listening to the podcast right now, just keep listening.
Nothing
it just keeps
do.
Going. You don't have to go anywhere.
And you won't be sorry because I guarantee we're going to get into some super cool stuff with Liz on the other side.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk more about the secrets of antimatter and how to create it and the costs involved and what we can do with it. And there's a whole bunch more stuff to talk about. So you're going to want to click on that link, my friend. If you don't have enough time and you got to go, so be it. Maybe you'll join us next week on What If Discussed. Liz, welcome back to What If Discussed. We talked in the first half of the show about how it all started with the Big Bang. I just wanted to say religion or astronomy, Encarta, Deuteronomy. Yes. It all started with the Big Bang. I'm quoting more Bare Naked Ladies lyrics to you because, I mean, you started it. And we're obviously big fans here in Toronto, Canada, where it is the birthplace of the Bare Naked Ladies. Regardless of this, we talked earlier about how expensive it is to create antimatter with crazy numbers like $100 billion to create a gram. But antimatter has been created for study. Where and how does this happen?
Yeah, so for example, at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, they are colliding at extremely high energies, these subatomic particles. And when you collide particles at nearly the speed of light, anything can happen, but specifically lots of different particles are created. They sort of come out of these very high energy collisions, and some of those particles decay into antimatter, and sometimes, extremely briefly. But when you have these giant detectors recording each of these events, you can sort of study when these antimatter particles came out and when they did not. But in terms of actually like getting a lot of antimatter together for a party, you have to have a very high functioning magnet and very cold temperatures. So one of these decelerators, the goal is to really slow the antimatter particles down enough so that they're not so immediately annihilating with matter and can come together. For example, there was a study earlier this year on anti-hydrogen. So we actually can make an anti-atom, which is very exciting, but again, in extremely small quantities that people are still studying.
So cancel my antimatter Halloween party then. Is what you're saying, essentially. I didn't think that had a chance to begin with. But obviously, we've established how, A, difficult it is, how expensive it is to create, and just ultimately then how rare it is. Yet, we've also established that studying it is super important. It can open up a whole bunch of the mysteries of how the universe is formed, et cetera. So it kind of presents a problem. I mean, we talked a few episodes ago, I think it was to Andrew Simeon from SETI, just telescope time, right? Just getting telescope time was the biggest impediment to them accelerating their work and their research,
yeah,
right? We kind of forget sometimes the practicalities of this as it relates to scientific research. So then how, it must be pretty competitive for scientists to be able to get their hands on a little antimatter to be able to study.
Yeah, I mean, those experiments that you hear about most often tend to take place at CERN. But another one again, and this requires a lot of resources and time, but is also very exciting. I was actually on the International Space Station. It's called the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer, or AMS. It actually is just up there on the space station waiting for different kinds of particles to hit, essentially. So it's more of like a passive detector in that way, you know, to see if it will detect antimatter or, you know, collisions that produce antimatter. But again, you have to get
a seat on the space station.
And it's interesting, actually, because the same institution, CERN, that has the Large Hadron Collider, you know, several stories underground, actually also operates that experiment on the space station. So they are studying antimatter very deep underground as well as very high up in space. Hmm.
What is the we would call the holy grail of antimatter secrets? What is the biggest question antimatter can answer about our universe, or what do we think its secrets are that it's holding that we might be able to uncover?
Yeah, I mean, physicists are always interested in new physics. And we have the best understanding of our world. We call it the Standard Model of Physics, which is kind of a boring name, but it implies that everything is standard. Anything that does not comply with that model is very interesting. And so the first thing that physicists are looking for with some of the experiments that I described is, you know, are there any imbalances or irregularities in the way that antimatter is behaving, or the amount of antimatter that's produced in different particle decays that is defying the standard model? And there have been some hints of irregularities, but not enough to say that we need a whole new theory or that there is definitively new physics. But at a more philosophical level, antimatter is super exciting because we really want to know, like, why are we here? Like, why are we as matter beings here discussing antimatter today? Why is it that this particular imbalance gave rise to the world that we see today? So the question of, like, why are we here actually does have a potential answer in antimatter research.
So not a small question there, not a small, I think, holy grail kind of works for that. So this idea of the mirror, you know, I talked about it earlier, the sort of the mirror image of each other, matter and antimatter. And, you know, I brought up that whole sort of, you know, evil twin parallel universe thing that we talked about earlier. But one of the other things that kind of stands out to me anyways from this idea anyways is this, I don't know if there's a specific standard physics theory around balance in the universe. I guess I could have Googled it. But, you know, there are people that just sort of believe that the universe has this sort of intrinsic balance to it, that it's a yin and a yang type setup. And that in the end, that's, even though it's not necessarily perceptible, that everything holds into this sort of perfect balance. Is there anything within, the sort of the antimatter-matter narrative that might contribute to that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's this idea called supersymmetry, where there would be a supersymmetric particle for every particle that we know. And that's another huge question in physics right now. There are several, like, big mysteries. You know, one is, why is there more matter than antimatter? Another is, you know, does every particle have a supersymmetric particle? And then there's dark matter, which is a whole other kind of matter. There's actually a lot more of that. But in any case, the search for the antimatter asymmetries definitely could have something to do with the idea of supersymmetry, and the idea that there is this fundamental balance to every single particle in the universe, even in ways that we cannot see and do not have the technology to detect.
Some interesting stuff today, Liz. And since you and I have been throwing back and forth Canadian rock band lyrics, I'm going to throw one more at you, and it's by Platinum Blonde.
Wow.
Which was a local band out of the 1980s. And they had a song called It Doesn't Really antimatter.
Oh, the, ladies and gentlemen, Peter Smeichen on fire today here at What If Discussed.
Liz, thanks for joining us on What If Discussed. We had a lot of fun.
It was so fun. Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
It is great stuff. And honestly, like the last time I heard that lyric, I don't know, circa 1986.
You're probably watching the video.
I probably was watching the video. They would probably take exception to being called a local band.
Were they not a Toronto band?
They were a Canadian band, Toronto band, but ultimately they had some, I think, some American chart toppers as well as a bit of global success. Another fun factoid, Mark Holmes, I believe the lead singer of Platinum Bond from back in the day.
He owned a pool hall down here.
He did. Well, he owned a... Again, I don't think that's the full context because that was actually a live music venue, but he's also a world-renowned DJ. He made that transition to the electric EDM, as the kids
Ibiza
once called it, and has had a successful post-Platinum Blonde career, but we digress.
We certainly do.
So at the end of the day, obviously, when you're bringing somebody on to talk about something that is highly theoretical, I mean, A, it aligns with the the entire DNA of What If, which is asking the hypothetical questions, some easier to answer or to theorize than others. In the end, it still sounds like there's a lot of resources being applied to trying to understand antimatter, because as Liz Landau told us, it ties directly to kind of how the universe was created. But it still also sounds like we're eons away, at least, of being able to even get enough antimatter to study.
Well, we might want to look at the Dole plantation down in Colombia, wherever they're making all those bananas.
Because
I think those banana plantations might be the secret to getting enough of this stuff for free.
So obviously you're being facetious. To be honest, like, I don't know, unless there's a whole bunch of other fruits and vegetables she could have brought on as a prop. That, and again, if you're just listening to this, Liz Landau brought on a banana because, again, if you Google this, bananas, oddly enough, hold some antimatter.
One particle
of antimatter because of the potassium in a banana. And I would agree with you, though, that, okay, well, if that's what we got, that's probably an area that we got to dive into to further understand this, because if we're throwing around a price tag of $100 billion to create 1 gram of antimatter, we're not doing that quick.
No, I'm guessing they've probably already looked into the banana situation. There's always money in the banana stand.
Don't assume, Peter. You never know. But in the end, the other idea that I we've talked about parallel universes before on and off camera and on and off the air. Science has really accelerated in that area, in large part because of this type of work that we're doing, where the answers to the questions they're looking for sometimes seem to, anyways, only be possible with the existence of other universes other than this one. Now, that's a whole other rabbit hole in the definition of a story for another What If, but the antimatter question seems to be the closest thing we have to seeing this opposite of this universe. And some people might say, well, maybe there's just two. Maybe there's not infinite universes, or maybe this is just evidence that there's a mirror image to this universe.
I hope it's just one other universe, because my mind cannot grasp, a universe at every turn. If I press the return key on my computer, that's one universe. Take a sip of hot coffee, that's another universe.
Yes.
There's too many universes to wrap my head around.
The choices you make cause multiple Peter universes, which, yes, that would be a lot to keep up to, because a lot of people right now would say this particular world is a little upside down. That's probably enough for all of us.
I'm at the point where I don't do a lot of things just so other universes aren't created. I think about grabbing my coffee and I'm not going to touch my coffee because that I would create another universe.
A fan of the standard physics model, Peter Smeichen.
All right. We'd like to thank Liz Landau again for joining us on today's What If Discussed. If you'd like more What If, well, why don't you sign up for the What If Explorers Club newsletter. Hey kids, there's tons of cool science stuff for adults as well, obviously. That's actually not for kids, it's for everybody. And it also shows you what we're doing behind the scenes here, what kind of videos we've been working on, shows you all the stuff you've missed every week. If you want to sign up, go to whatifshow.com. That's whatifshow.com. That's it for today's show. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on What If Discussed.